Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
6:11 now, and it's Monday morning, December 23rd, Christmas Eve, and it's a dang-on shame, really, if you think about the weather, because this could be chillier today, or about the same, I guess, as it was yesterday, maybe a little bit warmer, highs of 74, and then tomorrow, Christmas Eve, highs of 68, then we get to Christmas Day, and you're talking about highs of 72 with a 70% chance for showers, so really more Easter-like than Christmas, but what are you going to do, right? And then looking ahead to the weekend and the next holiday, New Year's, for the weekend, we're talking about, well, let's get it to Thursday, highs of 73, 76 on Friday, 76 on Saturday, 70 for Sunday with a 40% chance for showers, which is not good because I plan on getting my year-end round of golf in. With that, we welcome in Aaron Dusso, Associate Professor of Political Science at Indiana University, Indianapolis, our friend. How you doing, Professor?
Good, good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy Kwanzaa. Happy Hanukkah. Whatever you celebrate. I'm not here to judge. But I will tell you this. We do appreciate all the help that you've given us throughout the year. We really do. And we wish you the best.
Well, thank you very much.
You know, I get paid to follow the government goings on. Let's put it that way. And I'll be damned if I know what happened. So maybe you can help us out because you get paid to study it. And man, I don't know. There's so many moving parts on this. Where do you want to start, Professor?
Right. Yeah. I mean, to me, the most fascinating part is we're going to return to, you know, to the kind of the Trump's first administration, where we're going to see a lot of social media activity. And I don't want to say that as a criticism, because the bully pulpit for the president has been around since at least Teddy Roosevelt. So it's just done in a different way, rather than television or radio or standing giving a speech. It's through social media. But that can cause chaos right away. And the new element to me is Elon Musk. To me, he is a complete wild card that we really don't have a precedent for, you know, looking in the past.
I heard somebody say yesterday that Elon Musk is kind of like an unelected prime minister, which really kind of, A, slapped me in the face, and B, got me to thinking maybe they're right. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, to the extent, I mean, in his best corollary is that there's been, you know, wealthy interests, you know, and powerful wealthy interests that have been influencing government since the beginning. So that's not new. But what's really new is having, you know, it done in public, right? So this is the most public way you can possibly do it. So, you know, lobbying Congress, you know, behind closed doors, common. Doing it in front of everybody with your demands, you know, on social media, that's completely new, and it certainly has a big influence.
So let's talk about the bill itself, because I know he was tweeting pictures of the bill. I know Elon Musk was tweeting things that were outright false about what was in the bill. But when it comes to the final version, just to be fair and accurate, did anybody have a chance to read everything that was in it and understand? Because you see what I'm saying? It's easy to look at a big stack of papers and say nobody read it. It's also easy to look at a smaller stack of papers and say success until you look into the details of, do we really know what's in it or what's not?
Right. I mean, to actually know the details. I think because it slimmed down, the one that was actually finally passed went from like 1,500 pages to down to 150 pages.
Which is still very, very complicated policy, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. To actually know the details of how things are going to work, that's different than just knowing the broad story that, oh, it still includes, you know, farming help. It still includes disaster relief. And then, of course, it funds the budget, you know, government at the same levels until March 14th. OK, that's big ticket. That's upper level numbers. But what the details are, yeah, most people aren't going to know that.
So I guess what that makes me wonder is, does this set the tone for the second Trump administration with Elon Musk involved with social media? Does it become style over substance, or has it always been?
Well, there's always been part of it. I mean, that's kind of what the bully pulpit idea is that you can get the public behind you and force Congress to act. So that's been the goal, you know, since, again, Teddy Roosevelt. But, you know, I think that the key here is that this is happening so much in public, and Donald Trump's use of and free use of social media is going to be, again, where he can change his mind instantly. This happened a lot during his first administration. And the battle he's going to have with Congress is going to be, to me, is going to be fascinating to watch. I'm sure it's going to be frustrating for a lot of people. But he's going to, you know, it's clear that his administration and Congress isn't just going to roll over.
I'm a fan of old movies, having studied some at my alma mater, filmed some at my alma mater, UNO, who now your former president is the president of, by the way, you know that.
Yes.
And I'm thinking the movie Mr. Smith Goes to, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, where I believe he gets all the newspaper kids to start spreading the newspaper, and then they have a campaign of disinformation against him. Is this just a high-tech version of that where, before people start getting alarmed if they're not fans of the Trump administration or Elon Musk and what's happening on social media? This has always happened. It's, again, at least since, 1900s, I guess. It's just that this is a more electronic version of it and a more rapid version of it.
Right. Yeah. That the rapidity of social media is the thing that's really different. The task and the goal to rally public opinion against someone you don't like or against a policy you don't like or for a policy you do like, that's the same. That's, that goes back, 150 years at least, since post-Civil War. The quick and easy access that every politician has or every, shyster has in our pockets, right? We carry around the news essentially with us at all times and we get it instantly. That is so new that we're still, the infancy when it comes to studying the effects of this social media on, the average public and how politics works in our country.
Somebody texted it in, and this goes to style over substance, 1,500 to 150. I wonder if they trimmed anything off, Tommy, and apparently they're in favor of what they did. It. I'm not against what they did, but I do know, having done this job for the decades that I have, that the devil is in the details. So you can't say 150 to 1500 is automatically a win if you don't know what's in it. Is that accurate?
I mean, it's accurate in the sense that it's probably less devil in that detail because we cut it by, so much. And really, it seems like, most people are going to have a better sense, at least when it comes to disaster relief, right? So what we're doing there, whether it's done well, that's a different story. But, at least, when you're allocating money for disaster relief, you have a pretty good sense of what's going to happen.
I guess let me put it that way. Yeah. Let me make the butcher analogy. I can have a pork loin that weighs 12 pounds, it's full of fat, and I can trim it down to 7 pounds, but if I don't know what I'm doing and I'm not precision in my trimming, I could wind up with as much fat and less meat or the other way around, right?
Right. Yeah. If you don't know what you're doing, I end up cutting out all my meat and I just leave the fat. That would be problematic. In this case, I think it was clear that they were going to focus in on a couple of things that were going to remain in the bill. So they got rid of the increase in pay for Congress. Right. So that's gone. And everyone knows that. But keeping disaster relief and farm funding, that was the two things that, could have bipartisan agreement. And so, the details of it are going to be known by the actual administrators of the programs, but in the end, they're probably something that both like.
All I'm asking is that the public pay attention to the details. That's all, because much like a magical act, the misdirection is often where the card gets palmed and you don't realize it, right?
Right. Well, that's
what both sides. That's not a Republican thing. That's not a Democratic thing. I'm just saying that's a political thing.
Right. And that's so much what Elon Musk was tweeting about. He was just finding out, in the 1500 pages, there's this thing, the pay raise for Congress, which a lot of people wouldn't have known about. They tried, seemingly to sneak that in into a huge bill, which is pretty common, is these big omnibus bills that come through Congress. They are just they oftentimes are referred to as Christmas tree bills, where you hang your pork, here, and you hang your pork there, and then you get your programs through Congress that way.
All right, let me take a break. We'll come back, talk about the politics behind all of this, what it portends for a Trump administration. Also about the policy and what happens in mid-March, as I understand it, when this other continuing resolution expires. And at any point, is anybody willing to seriously sit down and do anything about the debt and deficit? And is that likely to happen in a Trump administration? 620, we're talking to our friend, Professor Aaron Dusso, an associate professor of political science at Indiana University, Indianapolis. look, I'm all for less spending and deficit and debt reduction. Again, I just want to make sure that when it comes to just less papers, that doesn't necessarily mean less spending. It all depends on the way it's worded, and it's complicated stuff. 621 traffic now, WWL. 6:25 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our friend, Professor Aaron Dusso, Associate Professor of Political Science at Indiana University, Indianapolis, about the government shutdown that was averted. Professor, somebody texted in, I don't know about this, but they said, Tommy, AI can evaluate the bill in under 2 minutes, give you a synopsis of everything that's in it. No need for humans to read it anymore, especially when you have less than 24 hours to review. Is that right?
Well, I've used AI a bit, and it's very good at giving quick synopsis like that. But when we're talking about the details, right, exactly how this is going to work, it is not quite as good at that. And it can often and it still has a problem of making things up, too.
Oh, well, it's politics. That's the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the politics behind all of this and a unified Republican Party, because I saw Representative Tony Gonzalez, who has sincere border concerns, a Republican from Texas yesterday. He voted against it because he said, you know what? Lock us in a room. Keep us there through Christmas and New Year's. And let me take a step back. These people are human beings. They wanted to get home for Christmas and New Year's, and that had a lot to do with this, did it not?
Oh, yeah. I mean, no question that keeping people, in Washington when they want to be home with their families could be a big motivator for members of Congress, just like all of us.
But he said hammer it out. And this the budget concerns, the financing concerns, the debt deficit worries that we have in this country, Social Security, et cetera. This is serious discussion for serious people that have to put the future of the country and not necessarily their political future at the forefront. Accurate?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, what's kind of odd about this is happening in a lame duck session of Congress, and that, before we actually going to have a new one taking office in just a little over a week at this point. So, I would expect normally that this would have just waited until January to start having this kind of fight. But it's a huge issue. Obviously, $36 trillion in debt, $1.6 billion trillion in budget deficit. This is something that needs to be dealt with in a serious manner, right? Not through Twitter.
So what does the future look like for Mike Johnson, the leadership in the House? They have not voted for leadership, and I'm confused now, Professor. I got so many things. I got Saints. I got sports. I got college playoffs on my mind. What's the situation in the Senate? Who holds the Senate? The Republicans do, right?
Right. Well, they will as of January 3rd.
Right. So what about House and Senate leadership?
So right now they voted within caucus. They voted to continue with Mike Johnson, and Thune will be Senator Thune will be the new majority leader in the Senate. But they'll officially vote for that once they take office in January.
So what happens with Mike Johnson? Does he keep his position? Where do the Marjorie Taylor Greens and the other hard right components of this, the Rand Pauls, the Representative Tony Gonzalez, those kind of people, where do they all fit in with former president, with President Trump, correct me there, and I correct myself, and Elon Musk and this cabal?
Right. I do not envy Johnson, and he's going to be the speaker as voted with in caucus, but he is an almost impossible situation because even getting through this one continuing resolution till March was seemingly an impossible task. So the job that he's going to have to do to try and toe the line between kind of the far right and moderates, and then also working with Democrats, because, in getting this continuing resolution just passed last Friday, it required a majority of Democrats actually voted for it with, more Democrats than Republicans. So this is I would predict that Johnson's going to ultimately be replaced later in the year, because that's just what we do now.
So look into the Dusso crystal ball for me. Get it out of the mahogany case, purple velvet. We all know what it looks like. And they get the padding, then you get the take it out of the velvet bag. Look ahead to the first half of 2025. How do you see this playing out politically?
I think Trump moves on everything that the executive branch can largely do unilaterally. Mm-hmm. So things like a deportation can make a strong argument that ICE and all that's within the executive branch. And so I would see that happening really quickly and much faster than a lot of people are predicting. But things like trying to raise a debt ceiling, to get rid of the Department of Education, or to cut even spending, that has to go through Congress. That is a much bigger football and problematic for them to, because they're going to have to work together with a tiny majority in both houses of Congress.
Professor, I really appreciate you. I do. Thank you, sir. Have a great holiday season. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
You bet. We'll talk to Mark Mitchell when we come back, professor of zoological medicine, LSU School of Veterinary Medicine, about bird flu right now. Time for WWL First News. 6:45, quarter till 7, Christmas Eve Eve. Tommy Tucker here. And it's going to be kind of nice today, kind of cool right now. It feels very Christmassy, but that's not going to last long. Highs today of about 64 degrees. Right now it's 44, but then when you look at the 10-day forecast, specifically for Christmas and traffic, I can tell you that highs today are going to be 64 degrees, 68 for a high tomorrow on Christmas Eve. Christmas Day itself, highs of 70, 60% chance for thunderstorms, so more Easter-like, really. Then 70 for a high on Thursday, dry, 75 for a high on Friday, chance for showers, and 60% chance for showers on Friday with highs of 75 for the end of December is kind of crazy. 75 for a high on Saturday, scattered showers. Morning showers on Sunday, highs of 70. Then looking ahead to New Year's Eve, not so cold. New Year's Eve itself, highs of 73, but dry for the fireworks and everything else. And a cold front comes through, knocks down the highs of 62 on the first of the year, and then 59 for early into January of 2025. What does the year portend as far as bird flu goes? Well, let's find out with Dr. Mark Mitchell, a professor of zoological medicine at the LSU School of Veterinary Medicine. How you doing, Dr. Mark?
I'm doing terrific. Thank you so much. How are you doing this morning?
I'm all right. I took a ride to North Louisiana a couple of weeks ago, and man, I got to thinking about horses and goats and outside animals and so forth. And before we get to the seriousness of bird flu, generally speaking, how much ground would you need for a cow or for a horse or for a goat? You didn't see that one coming, did you, Doc?
No. You're talking to a wildlife medicine, zoo medicine guy. But how much room you need? Yeah, no worries. Like anything, the more space you give them, the better. Mm-hmm. In many cases, basically, you're talking about an acre plus for the horse and the cow. And again, what we're talking about diseases, certain diseases like parasites are one of those things where the more space you give them and the ability to rotate them in and out of pastures minimizes their exposure to different diseases, whether it be something like a parasite, or if you're looking at something like a bird flu, where with cattle, for example, a lot of the big issues you're seeing in California, where they declare their state of emergency, is because the cattle are now, the dairy cows are raised in more confinement areas, and then they don't have the ability to get away from those birds who are coming because there's lots of food spilled all over the place to go ahead and go pick up.
Much like a rancher, the doctor herds me into the corral of bird flu as he's supposed to. So, Doc, tell me about bird. Tell me about bird flu and what's going on with that.
Well, you know, the bird flu is something that is a concern every year. Really, this current cycle has been going on for at least 4 years, and it is tied to the migration route of the birds that we think about. Waterfowl are the biggest concern as potential reservoirs because they can be latent, meaning they can just carry it. And they might not show clinical signs, but they can also basically have clinical signs. And there's different degrees of this bird flu. There's low pathogenicity and there's high pathogenicity. And the one we're really concerned about is high pathogenicity, especially if it gets into other animals and into human beings, because it can cause severe disease, which is the case that we're seeing in Louisiana.
We've been talking about this. Man, I remember, I don't know if you know Garland Robinette or not, but I can remember decades ago working with Garland and Garland talking about the bird flu. Is this something that was predicted? And if we were talking about it decades ago, how prepared are we for it?
You know, we always hope that we're going to be prepared for things, but the last pandemic, we weren't quite as prepared as we wanted to be. But indeed, this is something that comes year in and year out. At the LSU Veterinary School for the Wildlife Hospital of Louisiana for the past 3 years, every wild bird that comes into our facility gets pre-screened for bird flu. So this is nothing new for us. Even in the heat of the summer, when it's 100 degrees, we have gowns on and gloves and masks, in booties, and we go out and somebody says we've brought a bird in. We go out there, we greet them, and we take the birds through a special room to assess them. So again, this is nothing new for us, but this is the time of year where we expect this to really start to ramp up the way that it is.
How concerned are you that this could jump to the human population, or have we seen it jump to the human population?
Well, we know that it can get into humans because there's been 60-plus cases. The biggest concern is if a human can transmit it to another human. I'm a wildlife epidemiologist. These are the things that concern me all the time. That's why we want to minimize the risk of these things. I think it's always really important that you prepare for these things. Again, for us, we've been doing it for a number of years to prepare for it. We want to minimize the risk that this could happen, because if it can, it can kind of, you know, light the proverbial wick of the dynamite, and then kind of go from there. So there's always that risk, and depending on who you talk to, some people think that the risk is greater than for others. But again, if you're prepared for something, anything in life, the better prepared you are, the more likely you are to face that.
Let me take a break, Doc. We'll pick it up when we come back. We're talking about Dr. Mark Mitchell, professor of zoological medicine at the LSU School of Veterinary Medicine. We'll talk about the bird flu, and we'll talk about it going from birds to cattle and humans, and how much of a concern would this be going into 2025. 651, 9 till 7, traffic now, WWL. 656 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, spending Christmas Eve. Talking to Mark Mitchell, professor of zoological medicine at the LSU School of Veterinary Medicine. The first severe case of bird flu in a human in the United States was confirmed in Louisiana. Professor, what are like the symptoms, and how sick can a human being get from this?
Tommy, it's one of those that usually starts with the respiratory system. And so many of the same types of things we think with the regular flus that we might get. And then it can basically spread from the respiratory system to include the gastrointestinal system. And ultimately, it can actually start to involve our central nervous systems, to where people basically develop that very severe malaise to the point of where people can basically become comatose.
Wow. And let me get to the text line here, the Oakland Jeweler Talking text line at 504-260-1870, because I'm getting some questions. So I said, what about backyard bird feeding?
Yeah, that's an important thing to think about, because basically these wild birds are serving as the source and the movement of this disease. And so when we are setting up backyard bird feeders, we do know that can bring birds in, and that can expose other birds. It's kind of the kindergarten concept. Mm. Anyone who's ever had a kid in preschool or kindergarten knows that the kids all seem to survive and thrive with that. But they bring home those runny noses, and it tends to wipe out the parents. And that's exactly what can happen at these bird feeders as well. If you start to notice dead birds around the bird feeder, that's when you'd want to basically contact your local animal control and or wildlife and fisheries to let them know. There's another disease that we know affects birds at bird feeders, mycoplasmosis, and that is something that basically historically wasn't there, and it causes upper respiratory infections, and it can be fatal in birds as well. So bird feeders, while it's a favorite pastime of folks, it actually can lead to the potential spread of disease for birds as well.
Somebody texted in, my cats kill birds and bring them to the house. Should I be concerned about them? I don't know if they're talking about the cats or handling the dead birds or what.
Yeah, well, as a wildlife veterinarian, I think it's really important that people recognize cats are considered the biggest animal murderer in the world. Mm-hmm. They're associated with billions of deaths of wildlife. And in some cases, it's actually affecting populations. Domestic cats should be kept indoors at all times. That helps minimize those risks. And again, this is another example. We know that cats can potentially get exposed to this. And recently, there was supposed to be a big cat sanctuary that had a number of big cats pass away from this. Mm-hmm. I've not confirmed it, but I saw some things over the weekend. So we know cats can be susceptible. We knew that tied back to the dairy cows. So again, minimizing your risk. One of the big things for us to recognize is that there's this interface. There's the wildlife, and there's us, and then in between is this interface of our domestic species, going back to when you were seeing these horses and cattle and backyard chickens when you were on your drive. And that interface potentially can serve as a source of exposure for us to wildlife. And so recognizing that, that by minimizing that risk of exposure, we can, you know, help protect ourselves as well.
Thank you, Professor. Have a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. We'll talk to you again soon.
Merry Christmas, Tommy. Thank you so much. Happy New Year.